Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to A Basic Conversation. I'm Brad Rieger, and again, sitting across from Father Jim Basic, and we do a podcast here, and we delve into various aspects of life within the context of the Christian perspective, and today we're going to talk about sports and ethics.
That's something you both are, we're both interested in anyway, right, Brad?
We might go longer.
At least you have had the experience of playing at the collegiate level.
I did. So why don't we start there? So for myself, I played basketball at the collegiate level, played baseball, basketball. Football and golf when I was growing up, but you also are into sports.
Well, I grew up loving sports with my father. It was our bonding. He took me to games, and when he came home from work every night, we would go out in the backyard and play catch, and my dad was coaching me all the way along the line. It was a bonding with my dad, and I've loved the world of sports. There was a time when I thought that I could play baseball decently, and it was between my junior and senior year in high school that I figured out, before other people did, by the way, that I had no future in the game.
What position did you play?
I played shortstop. And there were people who thought I had talent, but they were wrong. I learned it before other people. And it was interesting because at that point in my life, Al Kaline, great player for the Detroit Tigers, he was 1 year ahead of me in high school. So in the very time when I figured out, I'm never going to make this, I don't have it, he came out of high school as a first year out of high school playing and won the batting title. And he carried on for me all those years. For 20 years, I would look at the box score and how many hits did we get today?
You lived vicariously through Al Kaline.
I did for all those years, yeah. So the sports world has been just important to me, bonding, so many friendships and so on, yeah. And I continue to interest as a spectator.
And sports reflects in multiple layers of the human condition, the human struggle, and the human spirit. And again, dating myself back to the ABC Wild World of Sports introduction, they had this great 45-second intro to their sports programming, and it went, the voiceover was the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, the human drama of athletic competition.
Yeah, wonderful, just wonderful. Brad, before we delve into that, I got to remember there's people, when sports comes up, have different reactions to it.
Wait, you think they turned it off right now?
Yeah, there's some people who are not listening, already. Because, you know, I have female friends who hate sports. And they, one of the reasons they dislike it is because they don't know anything about it. And every time they're at a gathering with friends or family or whatever, they're talking about March Madness or the World Series or something that they don't know anything about. And it frustrates them. They're unhappy. I have another female friend who doesn't like any sports except the platform performances of the gymnasts in the Olympics. Because it's beautiful. I mean, it's bodily movements, and she doesn't know March Madness. She thinks March Madness is a recently designed anomaly or illness or something. No, doesn't know anything about it. But if she's watching the gymnasts on the Olympics on the platform, where they're twirling in the air, and she loves it. It excites her. So she participates in that way. And then there's the whole idea of diminishments in ability in sports. And I mean, I have friends who still play golf in their 70s. They play from the forward tees. One guy was just telling me he played from the forward tees. He's a golfer, usually has trouble breaking 90, and he shot close to par. And he's just thrilled about it. He said, you know, he can still do that at golf, an old man's game, and so on. I know a lot of people who are still playing tennis in their later years. So there's just a lot of ways that people, and there's a difference in the spectator sport of watching it on television or being present.
Sure.
I mean, being in the arena, you and I have been in the arena in Cleveland to watch University of Toledo basketball games, and there's an excitement in the air. There's a palpable feeling of people are gathered around and they're excited and cheering and everything and disappointed when it doesn't go well. It's different to be there than watching on television. Yeah. Anyway, that's different ways of thinking about sports.
Right. So one way to enter into this, make it a context of a spirituality in sports is really if we look at the Olympic Committee, they have some core values that drive the Olympics. And so, and those three are excellence, friendship, and respect.
Let's use those as a framework for our talk.
What do you think? That sounds like a great idea.
I like that. So what were those again?
Excellence, friendship, and respect.
Okay, yeah, let's deal with those. You know, I think the modern Olympic movement goes back to 1896, and that's playing off of the ancient games in Greece, and the first revival of the ancient Olympic games was they had it in Athens, which was the perfect place, and so on. And one of the things when they revived it, they put the great emphasis on participating in the Olympics, and that participating was more important than winning. Interesting way they sort of advertised the modern Olympic Games.
And so if we looked at examples of excellence, what comes to mind for you?
Al Kaline laying down a perfect bunt. A batting champion lays down a perfect bunt. Catch and throws the runner out at third base on a single from right field.
And just appreciating that.
Oh, yeah. I just love to watch him and to see. Or Ted Williams, I was never a Boston Red Sox fan, but Ted Williams, watching him at up in Detroit at come to the plate, you knew he lived for that moment. He lived for that chance to hit that baseball. And he remembered every home run, over 400 home runs he hit. He remembered every pitch that he hit a home run off of. He was terrible in the field. He didn't much care what was going on in left field. Sort of looked uninvolved in the game. Came to the plate, it was electric. I didn't even like him, but it was electric to see him.
What about a team that comes to mind when that term excellence?
What team? I had big fan of the Detroit Pistons back in the days of Isaiah Thomas.
Late 80s.
Yeah. I loved to watch them. They didn't have a superstar. They played as a team, and they were good, and I lived and died with them for a number of years.
What about the second, the core value of friendship?
No, let's stay with excellence.
Stay with excellence.
Please.
All right. Where else would you like to go with excellence?
I want to go with competing against oneself. So we live in a competitive society, right?
Right.
Winning at all costs and so on, it means everything. If you don't win, you're a loser. What the Olympic ideal of excellence says is that we should compete against ourselves. We should see if we can improve and do better and so on. So some might say, I'm still a lousy golfer, but I broke 103 times last year. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud of myself. I'm happy about it. I'm joyful and so on. And the other thing is about sports is that it lifts us out of ordinary time. So some of us are workaholics. My spiritual director always told me I was a workaholic, and I didn't believe him, never believed him. But he might at some point. But anyway, a lot of us are workaholics and so on. We're just tied to the job and all of that. And what sports tries to do is to lift us out of that. to give us another way of thinking about life. So instead of obsessing or just being down over world affairs and wars and poverty and racial problems and so on, for a while sports allows us to step back from that. I'm going to get excited about the March Madness. I'm going to get excited about watching the Super Bowl or watching the Olympic Games. You know, the Olympic Games is, one way of thinking of Olympic Games is they are a periodic retreat from everyday life, a retreat for the whole world. Mm-hmm. Billions of people watch it, and they're brought together. Well, we can get back to that. But anyway, here I want to concentrate on how sports, time is different. So we live by the clock all the time. Were we on time today? You know, people are at mass, they're checking their watch. How long is this homily going to be?
Move it along.
Yeah, get with it. That's enough. And yet now it's 2 minutes to go, and we know it's going to last 20 minutes, right?
A lot of timeouts. Strategy, trying to win the game.
Everything will come down to that last field goal with the clock running out. You know, baseball, there's still a ninth inning. We're down 3 runs, but there's a ninth inning. We get another shot at it. You know, basketball, putting in the clock was interesting, but it speeded up the game and given us the 3-point game. But, boy, you get a lot of those games, it's down to controlling them, not having a turnover in the last 5 minutes, or making 3-point shots at the end and so on. So it's exciting. It lifts us out of ordinary. It's not ordinary life. So it gets us away from problems, gets us into a different time. See, in life, there's work and leisure. We got to work. You got to have a job. Mm-hmm. Even you have to have a job. CEO, you know, after a career as a superintendent, now you got another job. So, and there's more new pressure on you and so on, you know. And so we got workaholic, we got a lot of work and so on. One of the problems becomes it's hard to have leisure. So some people, you know, on vacation, we went to Italy and we spent, we got through the Uffizi in an hour and a half. You know, we
it's nothing to brag about, right?
Yeah, right. So we got, in other words, it's hard to have leisure in our culture. You know, people, they get more tired after their vacation than they were before. So sports is a form of leisure. And what we hope is that it lifts us out of that humdrum, lifts us out of that chronic busyness, and gives us, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas said play was a virtue, called it eutropelia. The virtue of eutropelia is to know how to play. My mentor, Carl Rahner, wrote a book on the importance of childhood. He says we should all maintain what we knew in childhood. Play is fun. Play is fun. What are kids good at? I always say when I baptize you, what is your kid good at? He's good at playing. Don't forget it. We should, all of us busy people who are serious about life and everything's a trauma and so on, how about play? Sports is play.
Mm. How about in the excellence, let me throw something in, an example. The 1980 USA hockey team.
Oh, yeah.
The Miracle on Ice.
Yeah.
That encapsulates an awful lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, go for it. Tell me.
Well, just obviously the Russians were just the overwhelming favorite.
Yeah.
And then the coach and the team, they play their best game ever.
Ever.
The coach said, we play them 10 times, we're going to lose almost every time, but not tonight.
Not tonight.
Not tonight.
That's a great example. The joy of sports, yeah. You know, along that line, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, up till recently the most prolific scorer in NBA history, recently and surpassed by another good player. What was that other player?
Be LeBron?
LeBron James, yes. You're right, yeah. So anyway, Kareem said that Magic Johnson, who had a flair for the dramatic and had fun and so, he taught me that playing in the NBA was fun. Was fun. sports should be fun. I love that. Magic Johnson taught Kareem sports, playing in the NBA was
and
fun.
Magic was always smiling, too.
I know. It was a great proponent of fun in sports, for sure. So, anyway, so for those golfers who every 18 holes is a grim struggle, maybe you could remember that maybe it could be fun.
Maybe it could be fun. Do you want to do the friendship and respect?
Yes, yes, go for it.
Well, give me a perspective on how friendship, that Olympic value, how
well,
does that?
Team, that it brought people together. The Olympics were good. Billion people around the world watching, overcoming their differences, you know, different political and racial and every difference, you know, nationalism and so on. We're all watching one thing together. And we have this beautiful vision of the athletes marching in together, right? All different countries.
Opening ceremony.
Closing ceremony. And now we're sharing little gifts with one another. People in the United States giving gifts to people, the Russian counterparts.
And that's with the backdrop that there's wars all over the world.
Yep.
And there's political fractured even at the Olympics. Some people boycotting. Some people think some should be kicked out. So that's always a part of it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And yet here is this great vision of people living in harmony and so on. One thing, then it takes me back to the United States and our own situation, and that is, I think, one of the great developments in sociologically in the United States was Title IX.
Mm-hmm.
That said that women's sports had to have an equality with men. And I think that has made a difference in male-female relationships, et cetera. Was I in high school, there was no sports for girls at Toledo Central Catholic in 1954. You know, the girls cheered for the boys. Now the girls are participating. They have their own sports. Now it changes the dynamics, I think, of male-female relationships. I think it's been one of the great things. And now we got, like in the Olympics now, we have as many sports for women as for men. And the United States had more women participants at the Olympics in recent years than the men. And our winning soccer team is just known all over the world and so on. So that's good for women. I've been at University of Toledo basketball games and watching the women play, and I know you go regularly to the women's games, and it's just wonderful, and to see the little girls there saying, "Well, I could do that," or getting autographs of the collegiate women,
right.
Just wonderful.
After the game,
it brought me to tears at times when I saw that.
Another change is it's neat to see the male athletes there cheering on.
Cheering for, I love it, yes.
In the front row.
Yeah.
That's
the
really.
Male athletes cheering for the
really
women.
Powerful.
So we need, this is helping us get over patriarchy, right?
Yep.
It's helping us to get a more mutual society of respecting men and women and so on, you know.
The idea of respect.
Yeah.
Does sportsmanship come to mind when you think respect? What comes to mind with that ideal, the Olympic ideal of respect?
Yeah, sportsmanship for sure. We need more of that. We don't need athletes punching one another and all of that. So, respect, that's one of those core values, whether.
Yes.
We had excellence and
friendship.
Friendship and respect.
And
we got respect now. So, there's a lot of ways we can think of respect for our own bodies. Hmm. Respect for the human body. That would be good to get in there. The human body is, in our Christian outlook, the body is created by God. God makes the humans by forming a body in clay and then inspirits it, breathes the spirit into the body, you know. So we believe in the fundamental goodness of the human body. The human body is the symbol of the soul. We could say we have a body. Most of us aren't thrilled with this body totally, you know. But we are a body. That's who we are. That's how we interact. You and I are sitting here talking, using our bodies to interact to one another. And in the Christian tradition, we say we believe in the resurrection of the body in our traditional creeds. We don't say, I believe in the immortality of the soul. We say, I believe in the resurrection of the body. The body will be part of the final fulfillment for all of us. So that's an outlook on the body. So respect for the body is always danger idolizing the body, of making too much of it or too little. Trying to get that right is not easy. Our young teenage girls have to struggle with this, Bodily image is so important and so on. So the Christian outlook is good on that. And so it says when we see the gymnasts do these flips in the air, wow. That's the body representing the soul that soars, represents our longings for more than, reminds us that there's high ideals for all of us. And then I think there's also the respect for sports that says we have to over commercialization, salaries that are out of order, drug use, performance enhancing drugs. I think it's interesting, what do people think about keeping those people, those drugs out of the Hall of Fame? Consistently, the sports writers who vote won't vote them into the Hall of Fame. And some of us think there should be an asterisk by their lifetime marks. They use the performance enhancing drugs to accomplish this. My player that I love was clean and still hit a lot of home runs. There's
some ethical questions.
It
right?
is, yeah, yeah, for sure, yeah, and the way people would end up thinking about that.
Yeah. How about if I throw a couple names at you and you react to them?
Okay.
Jackie Robinson.
Oh my, Jackie Robinson! I once saw Jackie Robinson play at Ebbets Field. Mm. I mean, he changed so much. He was so brave. Changed the color line and so on. There were all these great black athletes like Josh Gibson, probably one of the best catchers ever in history, played for the Homestead Grays. My dad played against them in Pittsburgh in sandlot baseball. Those guys were so good and never got a chance. And Jackie Robinson opened it up. All the blacks who are playing today, all the Hispanics are playing today and making a lot of money and so on, ride on the shoulders of Jackie Robinson, who incidentally carried it off beyond the field. I mean, he was vilified. And even his teammates at first of the Brooklyn Dodgers didn't want to accept him as his own teammates. Pee Wee Reese became a hero because he played in the Dodgers, and he went and hugged Jackie Robinson and welcomed him in the team. It changed everything. But he was hit by pitches, vilified by the fans. He's a hero, a genuine hero. I'm glad that periodically players wear 42 to honor him.
Right. How about Roger Bannister? Broke the 4-minute mile.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading in Sports Illustrated back at that time by articles by psychologists and sports people and so on saying it was physically impossible to break the 4-minute mile. Yeah, there were articles, Sports Illustrated, impossible and so on. So Roger Bannister comes along, breaks the 4-minute mile. Big event, yeah. It broke down a barrier, in other words. Some of those, so-called experts who said it was physically impossible had to rethink their whole outlook on sports. People do surprising things.
How about Hall of Fame coach Pat Summitt, Tennessee?
Oh, yeah, but I haven't thought about her for a long time. She got dementia at the end of her life, didn't she?
Yes.
Well, what's important about that is the whole idea of women moving up in the world of sports and being coaches and so on. A lot of the women's teams now have female coaches, right? And some of the major league teams are trying to bring women into their coaching staff. NBA teams have some women coaches now. So she represents great progress for her, I mean, great accomplishments, but right. also a larger picture of women moving forward, not just as athlete performers, but in the world of as executives and as coaches.
Tom Brady.
Oh, my. Oh, my. I mean, I lived and died with him when he moved for all these years. I mean, you could say, well, that's riding a winner. But, I mean, that man, he was so careful. He wrote books about diet and regular exercise, totally committed. I remember watching him at the University of Michigan. He played in a bowl game against, I think it was Alabama. And I thought, man, he's really good. And then the draft comes along, and we're going along and along. No Brady, no Brady. 198th, I think. Oh, Brady. They mentioned, I thought he was great in the bowl game when his senior year at Michigan, but nobody else did. And here he becomes, you know, most achieving athlete on Mount Rushmore with others like, who else?
Well, how about another one? How about Serena Williams?
I mean, I loved watching Serena play.
Talk about excellence.
Yeah. And then her sister.
Venus.
Yeah, Venus, and, you know, who is more slight build and so on, not as powerful, but was more prominent than Serena at first. And then Serena kept getting better and better and ended up dominating her sport for sure. And I always liked her in her interviews, you know, and when she would talk about being a mother, for example, yeah. and how important it was to her to be a role model for a mother. I thought she said a lot of good things in her interviews. And, of course, the power, I mean, just overwhelming power as a tennis player.
With a tiger. Kirk Gibson, two scenarios. One, 1984, he hits a home run off of Goose Gossage in the World Series, and then in 88, when he's a Dodger, he hits a home run on one leg against yeah. Dennis Eckersley.
One of the fabulous moments in sports, the Eckersley thing sticks in my mind. He was not in the lineup because he was seriously injured. In fact, he wasn't in the dugout a lot of the times. He was just trying to work out and so on. He's hobbled terribly. He comes out and is pinch hitting. And Eckersley was the best relief pitcher in baseball yeah. that year. And it was just a foregone conclusion he would take out Kirk Gibson. Kirk Gibson, you know, he now has Parkinson's, mm-hmm. and he's a warrior. He was a warrior. I mean, I saw him get hit with pitches and just brush it off and so on. He was a tight end at Michigan State before that and so on. So for him to come out and then Eckersley's got him, and he throws this outside slider that's going to come back over the plate, and Gibson reaches out and hits it into the stands. And what was the announcer saying? I don't believe what I just saw. I don't believe what I just saw.
Yeah, I think it was Al Michaels, I think.
No.
No? Who did that? We'll have to check that. I'm not yeah. sure. I know Al Michaels did the 1980s.
Yeah. The anyway, USA so Russia. And then Gibson's going around the bases with that pump.
Yeah, pump, yeah.
And so we see that film often. Just a remarkable moment. And I like his comments about baseball and as a commentator and so on. Right. So he rose the moment. I mean, that's how athletes get remembered, right, for the big moment. That's why we remember Tom Brady because he won all these Super Bowls, right? And had such a great record and so on and did it well into his later years. I mean,
for sure.
I think that's why a lot of us rooted for Tom Brady. He's 45 years old and he had led the league in that second last year in touchdowns and in total yardage at that age. And he said he was going to play like that, but he worked at it. I think what people, you know, he kept his diet all year long, kept his training routine, had his own trainer and so on. He gave himself totally over to the game. And I heard that he didn't retire when he said he did not break up his marriage. Mm-hmm. That's what I've recently heard, that wasn't what broke up his marriage. So anyway, athletes in the public eye are, Charles Barkley says, don't make us a role model, you know. You pick your mother or father or your aunt or uncle or somebody as a role model, your teacher, your coach. Don't pick me as an athlete. I'm not the role model.
Right. Well, obviously the Olympic core values of excellence, friendship, and respect give us a way just to talk. We could talk endlessly.
We could talk. Right? I remember being at dinner with you one night with Coach McDonald and Tim Selgo, and we talked basketball all night long.
Yes.
And it's fun. I mean, that was that relationship I had with my dad. And I have that with my sisters right now. You know, right before I came on here, we did this. I got a text from my sister Barbara in Connecticut. She played golf this morning in Connecticut. She walked 9 holes on her short par 3 golf course. First time she's walked it in years and so on. And as my sister Barbara often says, the spirit moved me. She walked it, and she made a number of good scores, and made a number of good shots, shot a very good round. And she just, you know, she was just ecstatic about this. I got the text right before we started. And my sister Pat lives in town. I say she's my new sports guru. She knows more about sports than I do. And she will remind me, well, the game's on tonight at 5, or this player played at this college, or how about the Hurleys coaching at UConn. I mean, I call my sister Pat now, and now and then I hit golf balls with her or play golf with her. And she took up golf at late age. So it's a bonding that I had with my family, my dad, my mother. My mother was always telling me, you know, compete hard. You know, don't look like you're tired out there. You know, go for it. My mother always said, well, I was going to make it as a ball player and get her tickets to the World Series or something. Sorry, Mom, didn't make it. But that's interesting, reflecting on how much my sisters now are part of my sports life. Yeah.
The gift of sports.
Yeah.
This has been a great conversation. We'll have to continue it with a beer.
Off
mic. How about that?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Brad. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.